Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to American Italian Radio, where we explore the life of American Italian entertainers, storytellers, and artisans. There are 100 million Italophiles, people who like all things Italian, and our program is designed to share the American Italian heritage with all of you. We invite our guests to discuss their lives, their careers, and how their American Italian heritage has influenced them, and to tell us about their new projects. And now, let's join our hosts, Sal LaFerry and Don Mazzella.
Well, hello, and welcome to the Italian-American Radio Channel on Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to Air Radio, which is sponsored by Protective Countermeasures and by the Small Business Digest. I'm Sal LaFerry, and I'm here with my co-host of Air Radio, Don Mazzella. You know, as I said last week, Don and I believe that what this country needs to remember is that we are all Americans first, and that our heritage formed us and shaped us into who we are. We should never lose the pride in being American, but also we should never forget the customs, traditions, and memories of life as an American Italian. As we often tell others, our research in putting this show together indicated that there are over 100 million Americans, nearly one-third of the country, if you can believe that, who are either American Italian by heritage or have identified themselves as Italophiles. So, as people often ask, what's an Italophile? Well, an Italophile is someone who enjoys all things Italian, from the food to the wine to the cooking to the clothing to all of the accessories. What we hope to bring you each week on Air Radio Network is the best in Italian American talk radio. Our guests will be leaders in each of their respected fields. Talk about what they are talking, where they are today, and where they came from. But more importantly, we will want to spend a little time taking a stroll down memory lane, reminiscing about those days growing up Italian, sharing the funny and sometimes not so funny experiences we all share. You know, the Sunday meals, the weddings, the funerals. And of course, we cannot forget that one really unique person in all of our lives, whether it was an aunt or an uncle, a grandfather or grandmother, we all have that one person, you know, who was just that funny person that you just could never forget. You know, speaking of funny, it's a funny thing. As I look at our heritage and traditions, I notice some pretty remarkable, or as I've often said, pretty unremarkable. Our culture does not try hard enough to perpetuate itself. Jewish children have to go to Jewish schools. Greek children have to go to Greek schools. So why is it then that our children aren't forced? And I know I get a lot of feedback about being forced and using the word forced. And that may not be an appropriate term here, but let's use forced to go to an Italian school. How many traditions are becoming but a faded memory? In the absence of that matriarchal figure that heads our families, our traditions are dying with them. Hopefully, we will be able to rekindle these traditions in each of you. I should also point out that our website, which is being developed as we speak, will have some of the best shopping for all goods Italian. We invite you to visit our website and share it among all your friends. You can follow us on Facebook and like us on Facebook and Twitter, and you can write questions or comments to Don and I and let us know just how we're doing and what you might like to hear on American Italian Radio. Now I'd like to introduce my good friend and co-host, Mr. Don Mazzella.
Good to be here.
You know, Don, as we get into spring, you know, one of the big things about being Italian, and it's probably a carryover to being Jewish as well, is how Italians treat their mothers. And as we get into the spring, we think about Mother's Day. There has to be a story, just like you all have the aunt, the uncle, somebody that's involved with, you know, that's one character. What's that one Italian, what's that one story about the Italian mother that you have?
Oh, only one story? Only son of an Italian mother? Well, I always tell this story. When I was started out as a reporter on the New York News, I was the nightside emergency reporter, and I'd always be called out if there was an accident or murder to go cover. And when the phone...
That's a great way to start a mother's story, talking about a murder that you got to cover.
Well, murder or accident?
God, I hope it gets better from here.
Well, remember, when you're young, you're immortal. You don't think about it. But the interesting thing was they would call me at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. in the morning, and my mother had an extension downstairs. And sure enough, by the time I got dressed, my mother had two eggs, toast, and coffee on the table waiting for her little dumpling so that he wouldn't go out without having some food inside. I mean, that's an Italian mother. It's also a Jewish mother, et cetera. But it's especially an Italian mother. What about you, Sal?
When it comes to Mother's Day, especially, my mom had this thing about, she had a saying, and it's something I always remember on Mother's Day, and it's that every day is Mother's Day. And she never expected nor ever really wanted us to show up on just Mother's Day and bring flowers. She would always say, you know, people would, you know, kids that would show up that, you know, never saw their parents all year long on Mother's Day would show up with flowers and, you know, and a cake and, you know, and spend 20 minutes with them. And she always used to say every day was Mother's Day, and that when every year that's the thought that I have, the remembrance I have about Mother's Day.
Okay. Well, one other thing I have to tell you about calling mothers every day. But now we have a really special guest today. Ray Fiola has one of the most extensive collection of movies on reels anywhere short of a movie museum. In the form that we were originally created, on reels, his home even boasts a movie house where we enjoy films as they are meant to be. His company, Chelsea Radio Studios, offers movie soundtrack recordings that can be purchased at Chelsea Rialto Studios. During the week, Ray is in charge of audience relations for CBS, but devotes the rest of his time to his families and film. Ray, welcome to American Italian Radio.
Thank you very much, Don.
Ray...
Can I tell you my Italian mother story first?
Oh, we'd love to hear it.
It's actually an Italian grandmother story. My dad, I remember, he used to call up my grandmother. We would be at his store in Larchmont, and he would call up just to check in on her, and he'd say, "Hi, Ma, how are you?" And I could tell on the other end of the phone she would begin going into this litany of problems she was experiencing. And after about 8 seconds, my dad would go, Ma, I'm going to hang up the phone. I'm going to dial again. And when you pick up the phone and I say, how are you? Just say fine. Otherwise, I'm not going to call anymore.
And did she listen?
Well, she did and she didn't. But I have to tell you, one of the biggest regrets of my childhood is when I was a kid, my grandmother would make fresh ravioli with spinach, and I would never eat it because I didn't like spinach as a kid. What I would give today to have some of that fresh ravioli with spinach, I can't tell you.
She used to make it with the ricotta and the mozzarella as well? Or just
yes, that? Yes, yeah. Of course, yeah.
But
growing up in Larchmont, what my dad and I used to do was, during the season, we would go fishing every Sunday. So we would go to the Mamaroneck Diner for breakfast, and then we would stop at my Aunt Lena's house in Mamaroneck, and she would sit me at the table. I was maybe 6, 7, 8 years old, and she'd put a nice little glass of red wine in front of me. She said, here, be a good boy, drink the wine.
I used to get the red wine with a little bit of 7-Up in it, you know, so it would kind of cut it.
Yeah, I don't think I got the 7-Up.
and then on like holidays like Easter and, you know, the big holidays. My mom used to take the fennel, which was, you know, in Italian, right? You call it a fanuc. You take the fennel, and she would cut the stems and poke a hole through it with a skewer.
Oh, my.
And you'd use that as the straw.
Huh.
All right, I remember having that. That was fun.
Could I just drop in and talk? Ray, you talk about what you'd give to have it today. I think of that as pasta fazool. I would go to bed without eating rather than eat pasta fazool.
Mm-hmm.
And I would die today too. It's amazing. It's interesting. We're three people from three different locations, and we all have the same types of stories. That's what Italian-American experience is about.
Absolutely.
So, Ray, I've been all week long in prepping for the show. Don's been trying to get me to understand more and more about the movies, and I must confess, I'm not a movie buff, and I really don't know a lot about the old-time movies. I'm more of like, you know, the Leslie Nielsen, Rodney Dangerfield sort of guy when it comes to movies. I like the ones that you can watch and not have to think about.
Right.
But Don was going through this whole thing, and he's explaining to me about matinee idols that were matinee idols when he was growing up and things that, you know, obviously I'm missing. And the guy he keeps talking about is Rudolph Valentino.
Well, I'm not that old.
I was just going to say, I hope Don's not that old. I never got that impression. But,
hey,
yeah, I mean, Valentino was absolutely the biggest thing in entertainment worldwide for the brief time that he was, you know, starring in pictures. And, you know, he was an Italian. He moved here, I guess, when he's about 18 or so, and got into show business very early. And he really just overdid it. I guess you could say he died from consumption. Is the overall the overall comment you would make? And I think he was 31 when he died, and it was, you know, the funeral was one of the biggest things that the world has ever seen, as far as people turning out to see him. And he was, you know, he was definitely he played ethnic characters. In addition to playing Italians, he played, you know, he had this character, the Sheik, so he would play an Arabian or a Moroccan. He'd play a Spanish bullfighter in Blood and Sand, and, you know, he was the popular embodiment of the tango of the in the 20s.
Before we go to commercial, I just like, you indicated to me that the first Italian portrayed was around 1913?
1915. It was a Thomas Ince film called The Italian. And it was a feature film, and it was actually released before Griffith's Birth of a Nation, which is always credited as being the first, you know, major feature film. But this film was a six-reeler, and it was about an Italian. He was a gondolier who, you know, decides to emigrate to the United States to make fame and fortune, and he winds up being a shoeshine boy. And it's a very tragic story, and it's a remarkably photographed picture. And for its time, it was, of course, very insightful. But the main thing is that here it was a very three-dimensional, full-blooded depiction of an Italian, of the Italian immigrant experience.
Ray, we're going to be going to commercial, but when we come back, I have a relatively quick question, and that will be, was in the movies, we're always depicted as the gangsters. The Italians are depicted as the gangsters.
Right.
And there was a question. One of our guests last week worked in law enforcement and went into television and movies for a short while when he got out. And one of the things that he was in was a documentary that looked at what really came first. Were gangsters sort of looking at television and wishing to become that type of character? Or was the industry really looking at the gangsters themselves and trying to portray them?
Okay.
We're going to get Ray.
You have your commercial, and then we'll answer the chicken or the egg commercial. The chicken or the egg question.
Let's go to commercial. We come back. Ray's going to give us his input.
Just how dangerous is social networking? Use of websites like Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube are all the rage. But what are the downsides of this new technology? The incidents of bullying, stalking, harassment, and inappropriate content are increasing. Just how dangerous is it? What can you do to protect your child and yourself from it? Go to ProtectiveCountermeasures.com for a free hour-long video on the dangers of social networking. That's ProtectiveCountermeasures.com for your free hour-long video.
We're back with Ray, and I am dying to hear what Ray's answer to the chicken or egg question is. What do you think, Ray?
Well, I don't think it's I don't really think it's that simple, because obviously the real Black Hand organization in New York goes back to the turn of the century, and the efforts to eradicate it by the New York police. Now, when you get into early talking pictures like Little Caesar, you have these Italian gangsters. You know, they're very obvious and unflattering portrayals. And then you have Scarface come out 2 years after Little Caesar, and that picture was so big that it generated a lot of protests from the Italian-American communities, from the Italian ambassador here in the United States. And so there was, and then, you know, the Hayes office came into being very soon afterwards, I should say the Breen office, and the ethnic portrayals of gangsters, for the most part, were toned down. And we talked last week about Winterset, which was based on the Sacco and Vanzetti story, and you had one of the actors in this picture was Eduardo Cianelli, who was a Broadway actor, and he came to Hollywood to repeat his role in Winterset. He played Troc Estera. So these early gangster portrayals were very effective, but they didn't last that long, and it wasn't really until the Untouchables hit television that you had the revival of the ethnic gangsters, because it was a historical program. And then you had this movie called The Brotherhood with Kirk Douglas, and of all people, Eduardo Cianelli giving an absolutely magnificent performance as a mafia don. And then followed shortly after that is The Godfather. And it was really The Godfather, as everyone knows, that opened the floodgates for this, this portrayal, this accepted portrayal of Italian Americans as hoods, as Guidos, as lowlifes when it comes to just their everyday carriage. And I think that to a degree, the chicken and egg syndrome was they just nurtured each other, and you had a few programs where on television were films, shows that were shot in New York that had some three-dimensional depictions of Italians. And then you get all the way up to The Sopranos, and that really just put the nail in the coffin as far as Italian Americans were depicted.
However, with The Sopranos, though, that show was based on the Cavalcante family in Jersey, and the documentary that had been done on that showed that, and I guess it brought up the same question of the chicken and the egg question, as you put it. But that was a family that was actually existed.
Oh, I'm sure that's all well and good. But the point is, the show itself was so popular that I don't think until The Sopranos hit the air, I noticed the amount of just foul mouth language used by everyday people on the street, in offices. I really think that show had a profound effect on how people who viewed television behaved in their everyday walk of life.
You mean emulating?
And then you get to Jersey Shore, and I think they were on the air for 3 weeks, and Italian American organizations all over the place were protesting that thing.
Ray, let's go back a little bit in time. In Sahara with Humphrey Bogart, J. Carroll Nash played an Italian. Well, I guess I have two questions, really. It seems that other people played Italians from other ethnic groups, and you seldom saw an Italian play an Italian.
I think not that so much, Don, but you seldom saw an Italian character who was a prominent three-dimensional character, at least not between like the late 30s and the mid 50s. During that sort of what we call the golden age of Hollywood, it was everything was kind of homogenized, and there were seldom Italian characters of that nature who really had something to say as characters. And yes, of course, J. Carroll Nash was Irish, in fact, but he was one of those actors who played almost every ethnicity except playing an Irishman, because he was, you know, he was a black Irish. He was dark hair and dark complexion, and he looked more Italian than, you know, than many Italians did. And he got an Academy Award nomination for that performance, and it really is emotionally, it's a very wonderful performance. It's still a little bit of the, you know, what I am going to tell you, as far as his accent, his Italian accent isn't really that authentic, but emotionally it's a wonderful portrayal, and I think it was a very important role for Italians at that time, because it came out during the war, when Italians were, you know, between a rock and a hard place, with the fascists taking over their own country, and then you had patriotic anti-fascist Italians who were, you know, as much against that as we were. And let me just say, before I forget this, as far as anti-fascist Italians during the war, there was no greater anti-fascist in America than Arturo Toscanini. He was a great champion of liberty and anti-fascist causes, and he donated a lot of money and a lot of time to anti-fascism.
For those listeners who aren't aware, Arturo Toscanini for many years led the NBC Symphony Orchestra and was perhaps the most, correct me if I'm wrong, Ray, perhaps the most famous conductor in America in the period from about 1938 onward till he died.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, 38 is when he started in radio, but even before then. And the amazing thing is, if you listen to a 1948 broadcast of Toscanini conducting Aida, you have to remember that Toscanini knew Puccini. And so you have an amazing connection between the conductor in the mid-20th century and the 19th century composer who, you know, created these wonderful works.
Ray, let's go back a little bit while we're in this period and talk about Frank Capra, who's perhaps one of the most famous directors, one of the few that was known by name to the American public. He always did try to put in Italian-American characters. Every Christmas we see the James Stewart movie, which
It's a Wonderful Life.
And there's always the scene where Donna Reed gives the family the bread and the wine.
Right. The Martini family.
Yes.
Yeah.
You want to talk a little bit about the...
Well, it's one instance where you had what otherwise might be a throwaway character who, in fact, he was played by a real Italian, William Edmonds. And the character was very central to the story because it was the core result of George's, you know, desire to see people own their own home and own their own land and not be subservient to a dictator like Mr. Potter. And Martini was as I said last time, he was the owner of the cafe that in George's nightmare turns into a sleazy saloon. So you have the beneficent Italian American running the cafe, and then in the nightmare you have Sheldon Leonard running the sleazy saloon.
During World War II, Capra did this series of patriotic films, Why We Fight.
Yeah.
And there's to me, one of the most iconic movie scenes is German troops driving through Paris to the tune of "The Last Time I Saw Paris."
Mm-hmm.
If you remember that, if you ever get a chance to see this series, "Why We Fight," it's terrific. And this was done by an Italian American. Let's move forward. I wanted to leave before leaving The Godfather. I always think that opening scene with the wedding for the original Godfather, I mean, so captured the Italian-American wedding, even to the football wedding and throwing the sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to comment on that at all?
Not really, only because I was married in a synagogue. So I'll beg off on that one.
Well, then that's a good segue into how does one keep...
And I must say, our wedding was like a meeting of the United Nations.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. Did you have a traditional Jewish wedding, or...?
For the most part, yes. Yeah, we were married in Rye by a former Navy chaplain, and we had the reception right there at the synagogue. Yes, it was a traditional Jewish ceremony, and I have to tell you, the Italian side of the family, the German side of the family, there were, you know, the entire Jewish and from all over the world. It was really a wonderful, wonderful experience, and I think it. You know, it just shows off the fact that we can all respect our own heritage, and at the same time, if we can comport ourselves and understand and respect each other's heritages, you know, that's what it's really all about.
Well, that's what this program's all about.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, one of my favorite stories of growing up is my mother's cousin wanted to marry a man of Polish extraction, which made her parents very upset, and the parents wouldn't go to the wedding. So I was a young child at the time, but my mother made the dress because she was a seamstress. Someone else donated the beer, and we made many sandwiches the night before. And if you remember, Pat Cooper, who I always mention this program, we're trying to get him on, talks about the football wedding, where you go to a table and said, "Who wants a ham sandwich?" When they raise their hand, you throw it. If you noticed in the Godfather, they even used that. Even though it was a fancy wedding, they did throw the sandwiches. And when my father saw that in the movie when we first went to it, he just laughed out loud remembering that. But let's move on. What do you think?
I wanted to mention. It was a book by Pietro Di Donato, and it was about his father. It was a true story, and it's called Christ in Concrete.
Oh.
And it's about an Italian American mason and bricklayer, and his whole camaraderie of bricklayers. And the fights they go through with management and with people using bad materials and such, and it's a really wonderful portrayal of this little area of Italian Americans that was very prominent in the early part of the 20th century. My grandfather, in fact, was a mason.
You know, it's funny you mention that book as I read it as when I was in college, and had a profound effect on me.
Yeah.
While we're talking books, have you ever read The Fortunate Pilgrim by Mario Puzo?
No.
Well, you know, Puzo wrote The Godfather.
Yeah.
But actually, The Fortunate Pilgrim, he always said, was his better book, and I agree. Because it's all about Italian Americans in New York and upward mobility. But we're talking about movies, so let's move on. Love with a Proper Stranger, had Steve McQueen playing an Italian American. and Natalie Wood, if you recall. Do you have any comments on that? Again, I keep seeing non-Italians in Italian roles. And it's always something that a little bugged me.
Well, yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's like when Edward G. Robinson played Frank Sinatra's brother in A Hole in the Head. The play was written about Jews, and Sinatra did it, so they changed it to Italians, and the language in the play just didn't work, and, you know, Robinson played it Jewish, even though he was supposed to be an Italian. Lovers and Other Strangers I saw so long ago, and in fact, I might not even have seen the whole picture, so I really don't remember very much about it.
Well, that's strange with you, because I've never brought up a movie that you haven't known. For our listeners, we have the pleasure every month or so of going to Ray's house. He has a movie theater inside his house, and he plays movies the way they were should be played on a screen. With the from reel to reel, and it's a real pleasure. And I first got to know him, actually, I want to talk about this. He was with a tent for Laurel and Hardy in New York City, and then when he moved to the country, he formed his own.
You should explain when we say tent. The name of the organization is the Sons of the Desert. It's a worldwide organization that was founded way back in 1965, and as of now, there are well over 300 chapters worldwide, and each of these chapters is called a tent, and they're each named after a Laurel and Hardy film.
I've got like 7 minutes.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about. I'm reaching over here a little bit because I always get kind of wound up in talking with you about subjects. What do you think is going to be the future of Italian-American portrayals? Do you think they're going to... Well, we have Al Pacino on television right now talking about playing Spectre. Do you think the Italian-Americans will be better portrayed in the future?
Well, I'll tell you something, Don. We're facing two problems. And one of them is the echo of myself I'm hearing. This is very difficult.
We're having a technology problem there, Ray. I'm not sure. We're not hearing anything in the studio.
I was hearing a very loud echo of myself. It's gone now. Anyway, we're facing two problems. Number one, as each generation comes along, the Italian heritage is being further and further diluted, and our heritage is becoming more and more homogenous. That's one thing. And the other thing is, as far as entertainment is concerned, we are more and more, entertainment is governed by people reading a balance sheet. And so we're going to have more and more decisions made by people who are going to decide to create or produce something that they think will be popular. And when it comes to Italian-Americans, they're going to be popular as Guidos and gangsters for the foreseeable future. It's only going to be the independent voice that is going to be able to continue or, you know, make periodic stabs at presenting the Italian-American experience or the Italian experience for what it is, which is multidimensional.
Hey, Ray, let's talk about that for just a brief period. You mentioned that, you know, where the Italian Americans are going to be portrayed as, you know, as the gangsters in movies and television and what have you. But is that not more a drive of what the audience expects? I mean,
that's exactly what I mean. Is that's what audiences respond to.
I'm not trying to take a stand either way on this, but just as a quarterback in this discussion, if there's a business side to the entertainment industry that's going to drive the need. If the public didn't watch Jersey Shore,
mm-hmm.
then the show would have never gained the success and it would have never generated the money. So from a strictly business perspective, I can understand why it is that driver. How do you then go against, or how do you fight the economics of the industry?
You can't fight the economics. However, there's one element to this that has to be acknowledged, and that is there are only a few remaining groups and constituencies who are what the media consider fair game for being exploited and being portrayed, in certain ways. If you had, Jersey Shore, if you had the show as a group of African Americans and they were, portrayed in the manner that the Jersey Shore people are, I think you would probably hear a lot more voices complaining, and rightly so. And I'm just surprised that, there aren't more, Italian American organizations that, take a public stance against these types of stereotypes. And yes, I mean, you do have to acknowledge the financial aspect of it, but at the same time, you would hope there would be people on the creative end who would be able to come up with more third-dimensional portrayals that, hey, this is successful too. What do you know?
Thank you, Ray. If people want to reach you, it's how can they reach you?
Well, if they can always go to my website, which is ChelseaRialtoStudios.com.
That's great. Ray, one of the things I'd like to do, we're going to go to a quick commercial break, but when we come back, one of the things that I'd love to chat with you about is talking about technology and how technology is changing today and what that's doing in the industry, and specifically what the impact that it may have on your business.
Okay.
Let's go to commercial break.
Profits and improve your operations? One of the most favorite places where small businesses go for advice and counsel is the 2SBDigest.com. For 10 years, America's small businesses have turned to Small Business Digest for advice and guidance on generating additional sales, improving operations, finding financing, and improving their bottom line. Small Business Digest is available as an e-zine, through weekly newsletters, and on Blog Talk Radio. To learn more, go to the2SBDigest.com.
We're back with our guest today, Ray Fiola, talking about Italian Americans in the movies, and we're looking at both a historical perspective and where we are today. And that just kind of takes us to the next natural progression here, and that is, with the advancement in technology and the advancement that's occurring, how do you see this changing the industry? I mean, obviously, it's got to affect you. I mean, you have a home theater, you're showing it on reel-to-reel, large screen. Obviously, you're not going to the CDs or DVDs or Blu-ray players.
No.
How does all of this affect you? Let's chat about technology.
Well, as far as my personal hobby goes, it has no effect, because I'll be running my films until I can't get parts for my projectors anymore. And fortunately, I have a fairly large fleet. But as far as my business goes, which is the CBS Television Network, the technology has had multi-pronged effects. First of all, we are now shooting everything in high definition digital rather than 35 millimeter film, so the costs have gone way down as far as what the industry calls capturing. The editing costs are still very expensive, and because we do very high quality productions at CBS, obviously, what is still a very much an unknown in the film and television industry is the archiving aspect of all of this material, because archiving digitally can be very problematic. There are constant changes in formatting. Formats can become obsolescent. A digital fingerprint can disappear, you know, for whatever reason. And so, the question is, how much of this material that we are creating are we going to go back and photochemically store on film, which will last, you know, virtually forever, because we now have, you know, low-fade film stocks that, you know, will last hundreds of years. The problem is that because digital is so prevalent that most of the motion picture film manufacturers are discontinuing their product. So we may actually get to a point where everything is being created and stored digitally, and there is the real possibility of things just disappearing. There are genuine questions on the part of people who are looking way in the beyond as to how much of the stuff we're going to save for multiple generations. The people who are running the show today, the people who are looking at the bottom line, they're thrilled with the digital platforms because no longer do you have to send out 40,000 35-millimeter prints to theaters across the country. You can send out a digital signal that can be downloaded into a digital platform projector, and it's much, much less expensive for studios and for theaters. But the archiving aspect is the thing that I'm concerned about, and that, you know, many others who are looking in the future are concerned about.
Obviously, you're a traditionalist when it comes to to the film and to movies. When you watch a present day movie, what's your opinion of HD? I mean, I understand the love and respect you have for film.
Oh, if it's done right, I think it's beautiful. Unfortunately, the last two films that I saw in the theater weren't really great representations of the difference between digital and film, because they were both created with a very muted color palette. One was J. Edgar, and the other was Lincoln. Both of them had, as I say, very muted color palette, so it was difficult. But as far as the imagery itself and the quality and the presence, I thought it was, you know, certainly more than comparable to 35mm. It didn't have any of the problems as far as dirt. You didn't have to change reels every 20 seconds. All of the snipes and the trailers were clean. They weren't littered with scratches and such. So I think, as far as modern presentation is concerned, I think the digital presentation is wonderful. It's gotten to the point where it certainly looks as good as film. At least, you know, if you're not looking at it with a microscope, but as if you're just looking as an average viewer, as an average audience member, there should be no complaints about the digital presentations.
Is there a capability, and obviously I'm a novice at the film industry, but is there a capability of taking a Final Cut film and putting it, a Final Cut movie, and putting it onto film?
Yes. Yeah, that's what I mean when I say a film would be finished digitally, and then it would be archived photochemically on 35mm negatives. They would make what are called black and white separation negatives of the various color spectra, or they would make a single color negative. It depends on where that technology is right now. But yes, there's absolutely the capability of doing that. And in fact, there are still theaters across the country that are showing 35mm prints of new films. They're few and far between, and not many studios are making 35 prints for distribution anymore. But there is still the necessity, because of some theaters not being able to upgrade, of sending out 35-millimeter prints, and those derive from a digitally finished film.
As you watch movies today, and I'm sure you're just not into one particular genre, you know, that you would have a broad respect for multiple genres.
Mm-hmm.
When you watch a film that has a large amount of CGI, the computer-generated images, what's your response when you see something like that? I mean, I would tend to think that it's got to be, you know, knowing where we came from in movies to where we are today, you got to look at it and go, wow.
Yeah. For the most part, I've stopped going to see the big action films that have all that CGI stuff, only because it really bores me to tears. The ease with which this stuff is created, really it causes it to overtake the entire action of the film, and I usually find that the scripts suffer because of the preponderance of action and imagery that takes place. On the other hand, when you have a film like Lincoln, an historical film, that uses CGI for composition, I think that's wonderful. In the old days, we had what was called matte photography, hanging glass, where you would have a backdrop painted on a sheet of glass. It would hang in front of the actual scene being shot, and so it would look like there was a huge expanse of buildings behind what was in fact just a piece of rock or something. So this type of technology has always been used. It's just advanced in the computer and the digital age. But when it's used to the point where it's the raison d'etre for making the film, I really just don't have any interest in it. I'm much more concerned with seeing a good story than seeing a lot of visual gimmickry.
One last question. One question, Ray. Of all the movies you've seen, what do you think is the best, has portrayed best the Italian-American experience?
Marty. I think probably Marty is the ultimate film about an Italian-American living and working in America, in this case in New York. The family experience, this guy he's not a hero, he's not a Guido, he's not a sharpster, he's not a gangster, he's a butcher. He's your everyday mug, it's a wonderful story, and Rod Steiger did it on television, but I think Ernest Borgnine really nailed it to the hilt doing it in the movies. There are later ones like Moonstruck and The Big Night is a wonderful film with Stanley Tucci, and there's a thing with Annabella Ciara called True Love. I saw it a long time ago. I don't remember that much about it, but there are certainly lots of films that depict the Italian American experience. But my favorite, my personal favorite, is Marty.
Happens to be mine too, but I think we're running close to the end of time.
I think we got about 5 minutes left, so we're.
Oh, good.
We got a little bit of time left. Ray, one of the things that Don had been telling me about was that you had been doing some work in producing soundtrack albums, and you're kind of involved with some educational institutions. Can you chat a little about that? Tell me a little more about what you're doing.
Well, yeah, my company, Chelsea Rialto Studios, I restore original motion picture scores written for films mostly in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, some in the 60s. and I do all of the audio restoration. I do all of the editing and the mastering, and I've produced about 50 soundtrack albums in the last 15 years or so. These are mostly composers like Max Steiner, Alfred Newman, Dmitri Tiomkin, David Butoff, and they're all licensed either from 20th Century Fox or Warner Brothers or through the Dmitri Tiomkin estate. Many of them I've done in connection with Brigham Young University, where the Max Steiner collection is on deposit. So that's something that I've been involved with for quite a while now. It's one of my many passions is motion picture music.
How do you get, not how do you get into it so much, but what's the evolution of the project?
What'll happen is in the case of Brigham Young University, they have all of Max Steiner's personal acetate discs on collection. These were discs that were recorded on the stage when they were recording the score. Now, of course, the score was recorded for use on motion picture optical film, but simultaneously they recorded an immediate playback disc so that they could check for that it was performed correctly. The film would have to be developed. So all of these playback discs were saved by Steiner. So Brigham Young would have them transferred to digital, and I would get the digital copies. And first thing I would do is go through all of the music and remove all of the warts, all of the pops and clicks and all of that type of thing. If there was a skip in one of the discs, I would have to find a matching piece of music and replace it. So there's a lot of repair and restoration that goes into it. And then I would sequence all of the music as it appeared in the picture, make basically a symphonic presentation of it. And then sometimes I would do the writing. Other times we would hire a writer to do a full background on the film, do a background on the music. I would write a full description of all of the individual tracks, what happens in the film while the music is playing. And we produce either a 24, a 36, or in some cases a 72-page full-color souvenir booklet, so that our albums are not only a reproduction of the original music, but a souvenir of the film itself.
Where did you get schooled in all of that? It seems somewhat technical.
I really just learned as I needed. I originally was editing music on cassette. Then I was editing on linear track video, then on hi-fi video, reel-to-reel at the same time. And then when computers came in, you know, I got a small program, and then I grew the programs that I used as I was increasing the amount of editing and restoration that I needed to do. So I was completely self-taught.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I just want to switch gears. One last topic I'd love to chat with you about quickly, and that is with the industry today. Who are some of the up-and-coming American Italians that are in the film industry, be it writers, producers, directors, that you think we should keep an eye on?
Well, as Don had mentioned to me in an email, Mia Sorvino is one, certainly. She's, you know, her dad, Paul Sorvino, is a longtime Italian-American actor and singer. And, she's certainly followed well in her dad's footsteps.
Well, let me jump in here and talk about Sorvino for a moment in terms of Goodfellas. Goodfellas.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that movie?
It's a great movie. It's obviously way out there, and you know, it's but it's it certainly has enough Italian Americans behind it that you can't say it's you can't really throw mud at it for that reason. As a film, it's a great picture.
It's based on a true incident.
Yeah. Ray Liotta played this real life character Henry Hill, who I think just passed away about a year ago.
Yes, if I recall correctly, they found a car in a garage in Jersey City with $100,000 tucked in the trunk from him. We're getting towards the end. I seem to be rushing this program a little bit, but I'm not. I want to make sure we get everything in. Can we once again hear how they can get in touch with you, Ray?
Yeah, they can go to my website, which is ChelseaRialtoStudios.com, and there's an email address there, which is Ray@ChelseaRialtoStudios.com.
Before we cut off today, we want to talk about Frank and what happened to him between our visit. He got a contract for a book.
That's right. Frank Santasola, who was our guest last week, who wrote a book called Miranda Rights. It was a story about his escapades as a deep undercover investigator for the police department in Westchester County. He wrote a book, and fortunately, from what I understand from Frank this week, was that he found a publisher.
Right.
I'm going to assume you had your hand in that, so you may want to chat about that briefly.
No, not really. It was a pleasure to help. I just wanted to mention it here while Ray was still on, because in little respect, Ray was partly responsible, because the last time we had a conversation, he reminded us. Ray, we wanted to thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure.
And we hope you'll come back again and talk more.
And lots of good luck with the program.
Thank you. We really appreciate that. Hopefully, hopefully we'll start building up a larger and larger listening base as the show progresses on over the next couple of months. Well, folks.
Well, you know the old saying: you tell one Italian, you tell Italy.
Well. Hopefully you're right about that. We're going to test that theory, Ray.
Okay.
We're going to test that theory. Thanks again for coming on.
All righty. Take care, gentlemen.
All right, folks. We hope you enjoyed the show and will share this program with your family and friends. Please follow us on Facebook. Go to our Facebook page, American Italian Radio, and like us. And you can also follow us on Twitter at #USAItalianRadio. For Don Mazzella and myself, thank you for listening, and we hope to have you back real soon.
Thank you for listening to American Italian Radio, the Air Channel. We hope you've enjoyed today's program, and we look forward to you joining us again next week. Please follow us on Facebook at American Italian Radio and on Twitter at #USAItalianRadio.